Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Talk Eastern Europe, the only podcast dedicated to debating and discussing the issues facing this region and affiliated with the New Eastern Europe magazine in Poland. My name is Adam Reichert. I am the editor-in-chief of New Eastern Europe, based in Krakow.
And I am Maciek Makurski, an analyst and contributing editor to New Eastern Europe, based in Warsaw. Welcome, everybody, to our 12th episode of the podcast.
Yes, welcome. It's good to be back after a short spring break. We have some exciting plans for the next several episodes and also for developing the podcast further. But before we begin, I want to let all of our listeners know that we have set up a Patreon page, which will allow you to show your support for our podcast. As many of our listeners and readers know, New Eastern Europe is a nonprofit publication. All of our activities are grant-funded or supported by sales and donations. This podcast is 100% an additional activity and that Maciek and I do. In other words, we have no budget for this, and all of our equipment, time, and resources are donated by myself and Maciek. The knee affiliation helps us spread the word, but the podcast is purely driven by our passion to help understand this region better, together with our guests and listeners. So those listeners out there who would like to directly support the Talk Eastern Europe podcast can go online to our Patreon site, which is www.patreon.com/talkeasterneurope, and can choose to support the podcast in any way that that you wish. We have several levels of monthly support, ranging from $2 a month to $20 a month. And I do want to say that for each type of support, there is a special thank you gift. And those listeners who do support us with $20 a month receive online full digital access to New Eastern Europe, which gives access to our entire digital archive. And all our supporters receive notifications of new podcast episodes first, as well as thank yous from us personally. So please consider your donation. Even $2 will help us reach our first goal of $100.
And let me add, Adam, here that we are really encouraged by the number of listeners that we have since the first 6 months of the podcast. Mm-hmm. So we hope that you decide to show your support. And of course, we also welcome your feedback and ideas for the podcast. And let me even propose here that to our listeners here that we really wait for this feedback and like it. And I think if you have any ideas what topic we can cover in the next episode of the podcast, you can let us know. And feel free to reach us at Facebook or Twitter or via email. This is really important thing for us.
Absolutely. We love hearing from our listeners, and the feedback that we get so far has been very positive. So please keep sending us the good feedback, the good information, the good support. And as Maciek said, feel free to contact us on Facebook or Twitter or other social media outlets.
Yes, let's make this podcast a broader discussion with our listeners. This episode is going to look at the main theme of the latest issue of New Eastern Europe, which covers the topic of the Eastern Partnership 10 years after its launch. And I must admit that there is a lot of interesting readings showing many aspects and nuanced details of Eastern Partnership. And what is important, the issue covers different points of view regarding the Eastern Partnership, but I had an impression when I was reading all this text that there is one very important common point for each text or for each author. And my impression is that everybody who speaks about Eastern Partnership agrees that the initiative should be continued after 10 years, that there is no voice arguing that we should stop developing this idea or simply cancel it. The question now which we have is that in what form or in which way the EU should develop the project or the initiative. And I think very important aspect is to set the new aims for the Eastern Partnership. Maybe this is a point of criticism towards the initiative, that at the very beginning there was no very clear aim. There was, of course, an aim of Eastern Partnership to transform the countries, bringing them closer to the EU. But I think to a certain extent it remained not understandable for the people, especially for the societies in the country.
Right.
So once again, there is a lot of interesting readings about Eastern Partnership, and I think, Adam, maybe we can give a bit of, or we can reveal what is specifically inside of the issue. Yeah?
Sure. Yeah, we absolutely can give a preview of the issue, and I encourage all of listeners to surf over to our website, New Eastern Europe, www.neweasterneurope.eu, to check out yourself. Maybe before we go into some more of the specific topics that we cover, I want to also just agree with what you're saying, Maciek, that the Eastern Partnership is something that I think all of the experts that we've talked to and interviewed and asked to write for us, they all agree it's something that is really important to continue. But the question is how, in what form should it be continued? There's a lot of criticism, and we'll get into that, I think, in our discussion in a bit. But part of the problem, which I think, I mean, coming from my personal background, personal understanding, is that the Eastern Partnership itself is still way too much of a, I mean, there are different levels, but there's too much of a technical aspect to it that a lot of people really don't understand what the Eastern Partnership is. And this was a task for us, a very challenging task for us when we were preparing this issue. And I like to quote James Nixey from Chatham House, who we have here in the issue, in his essay, which was very critical of the Eastern Partnership. But he cites data which says that only 5% of the people living in Eastern Partnership countries, and maybe it's worth reminding that the Eastern Partnership countries are Belarus, Ukraine, Moldova, Azerbaijan, Armenia, and Georgia, so six post-Soviet states, but only 5% of those people living in Eastern Partnership countries have ever heard of the Eastern Partnership, which is shockingly low. But even more so, less than 1% of Europeans who live in the European Union, whose policy this is, have ever heard of the Eastern Partnership. So for me, this is really shocking. Part of my personal aim of this issue was to also bring more attention to what the Eastern Partnership is, where are the flaws, and what has been done right, because there is also a lot of successes that definitely need to be celebrated, and then what we should do looking into the future.
Mm-hmm. So these numbers that James cited show exactly where the problem lies, that it's
right.
Not only about that people do not understand what the Eastern Partnership is, but they really do not have idea that the initiative exists.
Yeah? Right, like they never heard of it, exactly.
Let's go back for a while to the past when the mm-hmm. initiative was launched. People talked at that time that, okay, this is about, you know, transformation of the countries, but that people should benefit from them and civil societies should develop thanks to the Eastern Partnership. So this is a huge problem that this initiative didn't manage to deliver this need, yeah, because
right.
There is even a special, let's say, sub project within the Eastern Partnership Initiative, which is called Eastern Partnership Civil Society Forum, and it gather a lot of NGOs from the EU side, let's call it like that, and from the Eastern Partnership countries. So we cannot say that there were no initiative to promote the Eastern Partnership among citizens, but it occurred to be not enough. Yeah? And I think it's a right question to ask what we should do next. And I think that James points out really, really nicely that we need to set concrete and clear aims. Like, what is the end point of the Eastern Partnership? If we cannot, my personal input to the discussion, that when we are not able to set the same aims for the all countries participating in the initiative, which is quite natural after 10 years, we should be ready to set separate aims for different countries, at least.
I think, if I may, that is mm-hmm. quite a challenging task for the European Union. And this is, and I think some of the problem goes back, like you mentioned, all the way to the beginning of the formation of the Eastern Partnership. And a lot of, and remember, at this time, we're looking at, 2006, 2007, this period where the European Union was creating common neighborhood policies for the southern neighborhood. And then the idea was, well, if we have a southern neighborhood, which includes, the North African Mediterranean region, then we should have an eastern neighborhood, which includes the post-Soviet space, as well as Russia. In fact, in the beginning, the point was actually to invite Russia into this process, but Russia apparently declined. But the framework for the thinking and the framework for discussion, the point of reference for this all, of course, was the transformation of the Central European states, looking at what happened after 1989 in Poland, Hungary, Czech Republic, Slovakia, the Baltic states, even Bulgaria and Romania, that mm-hmm. they had, immediately changed course, direction, and there was, a broad consensus in pretty much all of these societies that European Union membership and NATO membership, we shouldn't forget about that as well, was the direction to go. In the post-Soviet states, it was different. And every state, particularly since the collapse of the Soviet Union, have developed in different directions. And so it's very difficult to try to transpose the transformation process that took place in Central Europe in these post-Soviet spaces when you have a country like Belarus, which is very dependent on its relationship with Russia. We talked about this in previous episodes. And then you have a country like Georgia or Azerbaijan, for example, which mm-hmm. are very different, have developed very differently since the early 1990s. So this has also been challenging. How do we come up with a common policy for countries that they themselves are very diverse? They have diverse and different strategic aims. Of course, we cannot avoid the discussion of the role that Russia plays in the post-Soviet space. And we can maybe talk a little bit about that later when we talk about Ukraine. But all of these different factors were not really a part of the conversation post-1989 in the countries of Central Europe. So this was, I think the beginning was really one of those areas where they had a framework for this type of process, but it wasn't fully translatable into the Eastern Partnership mm-hmm. region.
So to grasp somehow what you have said already, I would add that on the one hand, the EU had not given to the countries such a strong motivating factor as a membership perspective. But on the other hand, it wasn't motivating for at least some of these countries anyway, because we have a country like Azerbaijan, the country was never eager to join the EU or NATO. Yeah, that right. that was out right. of the question from the very beginning. So you have also differentiation in the perspective that the countries of the Eastern Partnership represent. Yes. So what I would add to that is what you can see in the opening discussion of the issue of the in the opening article written by Karol Bild and Radek Sikorski. There is an interesting point that they made, that there was one accelerating factor for the launching the Eastern Partnership initiative. It was the war in Georgia.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
2009. So before that, other European countries didn't reveal too much interest in launching Eastern Partnership, but the war in Georgia show that, okay, the EU needs to have some kind of a policy towards the countries between the EU and Russia. And of course, it raises the awareness that, Russia is playing hard in the region, and we need to address this issue. And now I'm wondering that, in which point we are here, maybe it will be quite difficult now to, no matter how controversial it sounds, to remain the interest of the some Western European countries in developing the Eastern direction, let's say in general terms. Yeah, the one thing is what you have said, what we can offer, but the another one is how to convince other countries that this is the direction we should keep and even invest more.
Right, right. I think that will be the challenge also for the European Union. I actually think following the next European elections and with the new European
yes.
Commission, is a good opportunity to rethink these policies and maybe come up with new innovative ways. But I want to get back maybe briefly, because when we're talking about this issue on the 10 years of Eastern Partnership, really our aim was to look, and I think we kind of are talking about this in the same way, is to look at the past, the present, and the future of the Eastern Partnership. And as you mentioned, the opening essay by Karol Bild and Radosław Sikorski, who were the former ministers of Sweden and Poland at that time, often considered mm-hmm. the founding fathers of the Eastern Partnership, because they were the ones who were really pushing for it. Certainly
they were political architects, not
right.
obviously not the only one, but still very important.
Right, right. They're definitely high level people who pushed the policy. So we were very glad to have an opportunity to get their input into this issue. And we read, as you mentioned, that the Russian war was the Georgian-Russian war was the kind of the trigger point for really pushing the whole European Union to start paying more attention to this region. Because as they mentioned, they actually argue that prior to that, Brussels was neglecting this Eastern European region for too long, and it was a wake-up call. But I think that what is very interesting is if we go to the next essay, which is written by the current Polish ambassador to Georgia, Mariusz Maszkiewicz, but he was at that time in the early stages. He was in the Polish Ministry of Foreign Affairs, which was responsible for crafting a lot of it. He gives us a lot of really interesting personal insights into how, and a firsthand account into the formation of the policy. And he argued that there was way too much apprehension or kind of fear that of a Russian reaction that tempered the formation process of the policy, and in some sense he argues that it was doomed to fail from the beginning, at least in some areas. It wasn't created in such a way that it would be super effective because of the too many ideas worrying that Russia would overreact if the Eastern Partnership policy itself was too strong. I think interesting for readers who want to get some background on how the policy was formulated and some of the thinking behind it, definitely read both the first two pieces, because you have some different perspectives.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
General remark I have also after reading all the texts about Eastern Partnership in the issue is that no matter you are more critical or more positive towards the judgment of the Eastern Partnership in general, the obviously benefit we have now that when it comes to a new phase of a discussion about the EU policy towards the East, which is on the horizon now, you have 10 years of experience of different projects, different policies, and different steps in general that had taken place already. So we will never now start from scratch. Yeah? There is something that we can build upon, and I'm aware that it sounds basic, but I take it in a positive way that we have now an experience that and the lessons learned, and we can build something more practical or more serious upon that.
I agree. And I think the test will be how much of a transformative effect this policy will have. I mean, we have to acknowledge that Ukraine, Georgia, and Moldova in particular, they have come a long way since the last 10 years. And a lot of it has to do with Eastern Partnership. But most important accomplishments is, of course, the signing of the association agreements with the European Union, which includes the free trade, creation of free trade area, very important for developing the economies of those countries.
Visa-free regime, of course.
Absolutely. Visa-free regime, very important for opening up Europe to these societies as well. So this is, of course, we have to think long term, but these are important milestones. The question is, I think, what you come back to, Maciek, is what is going to be next?
And I think this discussion has already started, at least in Poland. Recently, I have read very interesting report done by experts from Polish Institute of Foreign Affairs, like what can the EU offer next? And that would be interesting to see this kind of a discussion together with other European countries, from experts at least, from other European countries. I think that we are at the beginning of the new phase.
Well, there certainly is also a lot of work going on technical levels. And this is what's not talked about in the bigger picture discussions. We do touch upon it a little bit in the issue, and I would recommend Gabriele Bonafede, he's an Italian expert who's worked a lot on connectivity issues with Eastern Partnership. And there's a lot of work going on kind of lower levels, integrating transportation, infrastructure, communication with these countries and European Union. This will have a long-term impact eventually. But the question is also the high-level reforms that are needed in order to make these technical issues work as they're designed to work. And that includes also, of course, corruption, having removing kind of the oligarch structures in a lot of these countries. These are the ones, these are the areas that still need a lot of work in many of the Eastern Partnership states when we're talking about reforming the region.
Yeah, that this technocratic side of the Eastern Partnership is in the same time needed and problematic. And I mean problematic because it's usually not visible by people, and you can feel the effects after some period of time. And on the what is taking place on the high level is very often more symbolic, but this is important because this is something you can show to the people that okay, you will benefit from it. And I think we need simply to keep both levels. That's this more technocratic, let's say bureaucratic, that improves everyday life. But in the long run, as you said, and try to deliver like big projects that are simply, you know, a strong message that Europe is there and is interested to bring these countries closer still.
Yeah, and that's why I think, as I mentioned earlier, I think it's this new European Commission after the elections, a new European Parliament coming at the end of 2019, beginning 2020. Next year, Germany will have the presidency of the Council of the European Union, and I've heard that they are going to try to be developing a new Eastern policy or European-wide Ostpolitik. This is one of their goals for their presidency. So I think we'll have a renewed focus, and hopefully, I really hope that this is an opportunity to try to focus on becoming more effective and really talking about the issues that I think some of these countries want to hear, which includes possibility of a membership perspective in the European Union. That is the one of the areas that not everybody in the European Union wants to talk about. But I think keeping the status quo is probably not going to be an effective policy. And I would add also that we should look at integrating not just Eastern Partnership, but look at the developments that are taking place in the Western Balkans as well. And some of these countries have already opened their negotiation processes, and some are in more advanced stages than others. But maybe there's an opportunity to connect some of that that's taking place, some of the experience of the Western Balkans and the Eastern Partnership, and how can we connect that? Because I think these regions are more connected than on the political level or on the policy level that we're seeing coming out of Brussels.
I think it can work as some kind of a diffusion effect, that if you see the progress in one country, there is a bit of chance that the others will follow. But at this point, I would add one more thing, that because in this discussion, we focused properly, I think, on the EU side, but we shouldn't forget that the effort from the each EEP country is also needed, that the EU also needs to see that there is a political will to transform the countries and to do this effort, not only to wait for some kind of incentives, or simply money from the EU, because it can be like a double-sided effort to make it useful or workable. And having said that, I would like to add or to talk about one experience we had, Adam, recently, when we participated in the conference organizing College of Europe in Natalie in Warsaw. Mm-hmm. And we saw there a lot of young people from Eastern Partnership countries who were very well prepared to the discussion about the Eastern Partnership. And I think this is also a big thing to invest in young people in Eastern Partnership countries, because these young people will be a driver of change in these societies. Maybe not in all societies, but I think this is also a very important aspect that there will be, there need to be simply a group of people who will deal with it, with you know, introducing these policies, convincing society that this is worthy, and also promoting this direction. Because as you mentioned recently, that some aspects of the policy to the EU's policy toward the Eastern Partnership is not visible. This is also a question about like a communication strategy. Yeah, like how visible is the EU in general in these countries? Yeah, right. for the society. Right.
Absolutely. And I think, I mean, the most effective kind of projects that work for Europe are these exchange programs for young people and expanding opportunities for young people to come and study in Europe. And I think also allowing Europeans to go and get to know the Eastern Partnership countries better also helps build awareness among young Europeans that these countries are also a part of the wider European continent. So certainly, and I think if you look at some of the essays, the recommendations are invest more in the next generation, focus on these kind of exchange programs for young students. And this is, as you meant, this is probably where a lot of change can come for the next generation, at least. Yeah.
Was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, another topic covered by the issue is the 30-year anniversary of the fall of the communism in Central Europe. And to be honest, I think it is such a broad issue that that probably it can be like a separate issue for discussing the experience of each country of Central Europe after 30 years, because it was a huge transformation process. So maybe please give Adam to our listeners an overview of what they can find inside. And the interesting question for me is to how to grasp the experience of all regions. Countries into one story within one issue.
Yeah, that is the challenge. It was one of the things, of course, when we're putting together the magazine, is that we only have 5 issues a year. The summer issue, which is the current issue we just released, is a double issue. So we try to have kind of a double topic in the issue. That's why the first half, as we already discussed, is on the Eastern Partnership. The second one is looking at 30 years of transformation in Central Europe. This was challenging because what we really wanted to do was get a voice from every country that had gone through it and kind of revisit the memory of 1989, because this, in many of the countries, is still somewhat controversial. The memory is evolving depending on which country you're in. We can look at Poland, for example. Here, the roundtable discussions, for example, as is mentioned in the essay on Poland, is quite a controversial topic because of how it's interpreted today. Some interpret it as a success of you know, the end of communism, democracy, and the return to Europe, where others see it as more of a lost opportunity and did not go far enough to really put Poland on the correct path. To shedding the skin of the communist era. If we look at the other countries, which for was me was very surprising, really Bulgaria and Romania, for example, are this memory of the communist period and the change of 1989 is very much less discussed in the public discourse and in the public space in these countries, where in countries like Poland or Hungary or Czech Republic or Slovakia, it's much more present in the discussions and the discourse, and often looked at how those changes that were taking place, or even that year of 1989, which was such an important year, had an impact and still has an impact on politics and policies today. So for me, that was quite interesting, and I recommend our readers really to really get a broad understanding of how 1989 is remembered. To go through these essays that we have in the new issue.
Mm-hmm. Would you link this lack of presence of the discussion in the discourse of this communist era? Would you link it to the fact of having or not the process of decommunization? Because that can't be something in that, but that maybe there are differences in the strategies that the countries took to deal with the past. Yeah, so I'm referring here mostly to the fact that there were differences how the countries decided to engage the people who were connected with the previous communist system. Or so in some countries like Czech Republic, the most of the former elites were simply taken out of the picture. In the countries like in Poland, it was simply kind of, you know, I think I can say even cooperation, yeah, between democratic opposition and some post-communist forces, yeah.
In Bulgaria, for example, in Bulgaria, you have basically mm-hmm. just an internal conflict in internal of the communist party. So basically, the change itself wasn't. I wouldn't even wonder whether it's a revolution or not. Removing the kind of the more autocratic elements of the communist party, rebranding mm-hmm. the communist party as a social democratic party. And basically maintaining power, I think this is also. So I think you're right. There is definitely a link to the process of decommunization in the countries, but maybe even more so, it's the link to the process of the immediate change of that year, yeah. 1989. And that's why 1989, I think, is so critical to look
at. Who was the main actor in establishing a new order? Yeah,
mm-hmm. That's
was
right.
It more post-communism force or other? The one having roots in democratic opposition,
right?
And I think this is one of the area the countries differ, and the factor that also impacts further changes in the countries.
And I think also set the tone for politics in these countries. Because obviously we're in Poland, so we have this kind of Polish context that we're often looking at. But when you go back to 1989, a lot of those players are still very much involved in setting the tone of the politics today. And it really depended on not just what side of the round table, that it had any sides in the sense that it was round, but what side of the discussion you were on, but also what side of each side. So there were, you know, internal splits that evolved throughout the 1990s and leading into the early 2000s. And a lot of those people who were involved in those discussions back then or in arguments have definitely still involved in politics today. So I think that's another reason why 1989 is so important for these countries, because it also set the tone of politics, which we still can identify in today's discourse.
Yeah, from that perspective, it is, I think, now very interesting point we have that despite a lot of similarities in the experience of the countries after 40 years. That I mean here, first of all, joining the EU, joining NATO, that there are a lot of interesting nuances and differences in the experience of all these countries. So I think at this point, we can even maybe invite our listeners to give some kind of feedback about that, what they think about the experience of these 40 years mm-hmm. for each society. If you have any opinions about that, please drop us a message.
Yeah, it'd be great to hear what others, how their interpret of and memory of 1989. We'd love to hear your thoughts and input as well. And we're happy to talk about it in the future episodes of the podcast too.
Yeah, because in a way experience of the country, of the society as a whole, mm-hmm. but also very individual stories very often.
Yeah, yep, exactly. So Maciek, that's all that we have prepared today. I just want to encourage all of our listeners once again to check out the newest issue of the magazine, which is available at www.neweasterneurope.eu. And if you enjoy listening to this podcast, make sure you check out previous episodes of our podcast. This is already our 12th episode. We covered issues like Moldova, Ukraine. We've looked at Estonia. We looked at other Baltic states like Latvia. So
disinformation.
Of course, yeah, we had a really interesting discussion on disinformation in Western Balkans. Please do check out the other episodes if you haven't listened to those yet. And please consider supporting us. We have opened, as I mentioned in the beginning, we've opened a Patreon account at www.patreon.com/talkeasterneurope. And we'd love to hear feedback from you either way.
Yeah, I hope we convince you to have a look at the newest issue of New Eastern Europe. We'll definitely come back in the future to some topics from this issue, because it's a long read. So for those who are looking for a good spring or summer reading, it's highly recommended, I guess. So thank you for listening us. We are now thinking about new topics to discuss at this podcast. For sure, we'll cover elections in Kazakhstan. We will also try to start a broad discussion after the European parliamentary elections and cover different aspects regarding Europe, but of course relations of the EU with the Eastern Europe, which is obviously the most interesting part of us. So thank you again. As Adam said, please consider supporting us. Feel free to give us a feedback, and until next time.